The following audio is from The Village Church. More information about The Village Church is available at www.thevillagechurch.net.
Hey, how are we? Let's go Matthew 25. And for those of you who hate flipping around, this is the only place we'll be today. We'll stay right in Matthew 25. So if you have a Bible, open it up there. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one in a seat around you. Grab that. If you don't own a Bible, that's our gift to you. You steal that. Straight up take it. Run. Not sin. All right. King David, he says, you are better than life. Talking to God, he says that you and knowing you and walking with you, it's better than being alive. And then he says, as the deer pants for the water, so I long for you. I desire you. He says, my flesh yearns for you. My soul clings to you. He says, one thing I ask, and really the only thing I want, is to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. And then the prophet Habakkuk, he says, I don't care if I've got a home or if I'm homeless, if I've got tons of food or I'm starving to death, if I've got friends or I've got no friends, if I'm healthy or I'm diseased, if I've got you, I've got all that I need. So give me you and I don't care about the peripherals. And then we get into the New Testament and the Apostle Paul says, I count everything rubbish. Greek word for dung. Dung's the English word for poop, all right? I count everything as excrement. I count it all as loss compared to the surpassing greatness of Christ. Give me Christ and you can take everything else away from me and I'll be all right. I'll be all right. And then even Paul, he affirms what David said. He would say, to live is Christ and to die will be gain. But we'll talk more about that at the end. To die would be better than to be alive. Man, that's flip-flop thinking. Yeah. All right. And then historically, men talk this way about God too. It's not just in the Bible, but like men have written their thoughts down. Like Augustine said, you are sweeter than all pleasure. John Owen, my favorite Puritan, says, oh, to behold the glory of Christ. If I could behold it, therein would I live, thereon would I die, therein and would I dwell in my thoughts and affections until all things here below become as dead and deformed things. And then Brother Lawrence, I think the one we've been playing with for the last 4 weeks, he was a 16th century monk who said, I have had such delicious thoughts on the Lord, I am ashamed to mention them. Just sounds dirty, all right? Just doesn't sound churchy, all right? At all. It needs to be a thou in there or something. Now, these men, historically, they have not compartmentalized their life. They haven't divided it into sections. They haven't said, home and work and family and church. That's not how they did it. But instead, they said, Christ is my pursuit and he's my goal and he is the thought and he is the drive over every one of these areas. They didn't segment it, but saw one thing and everything as being a subset of the one pursuit. And so we ask the question, why are we so different? Oh, why is it that so few of us really live like that, but mostly we're good churchmen and good churchwomen? Which means that, yes, we go to church, we do this, we don't watch rated R movies unless they're about the crucifixion of Jesus, do this, we don't do that, and then we've got home, and then we've got our family, and then we've got our work. So what is it that so compartmentalizes us versus giving us this one great, deep pursuit? And so we set out trying to answer that. We said maybe there's three reasons. One is idolatry, and I don't mean the worshiping of other gods as much as I mean the best way I could describe idolatry to us is it's a desire that's in our hands, and desire is never wrong. All right, desire isn't wrong. Desire only becomes sinful when we close our hand around the desire, and it becomes a non-negotiable. So in the end, we say, all right, God, I love you. I want to follow you. But here's what's a non-negotiable. I want this kind of house. I want this kind of car. I want this kind of family. I want this for my kids. I want this for my life. I want this. And we'll talk about anything except this. Then what's going to happen, Ezekiel 14 says, is that anytime we try to press into God and know him deeply, he's going to want to talk about our closed hand. That's what he's going to want to talk about. So like, I want to know you deeply. And God goes, great. What's in your hand? Right? And so what ends up happening then is we avoid him. What's the best way to avoid him? Church, 1 hour. Here at the Village, an hour and a half. Count the parking lot, 2 hours and 15 minutes. All right? 2 hours and 15, I've got the Lord. And then the rest of the time, home, family, work, play. Best way to avoid him in the Bible Belt, right? Because, I mean, you can try to stay away from church, but people are always going to be inviting you to church. It's just easier to go somewhere. So when people are like, where do you go to church? Village. Oh, okay. And then they leave you alone, all right? It's actually better to go to church in the Bible Belt if you don't want to be bothered with God's stuff, all right? Because if you don't go to church, neighbors are always going to be inviting you over to dinner. So, where do you go to church? All right, so just better to go, get it out of the way. All right, so that's what ends up happening. We close our hands and say this is a non-negotiable. Or pride. Pride works itself out in the evangelical community by those who do not know Christ deeply but know him cognitively and then become the police of the evangelical thought and thinking and begin to govern how we should love him. All right, and that's pride. So they don't really submit their own lives to the Lord. They don't walk in any real humility. Instead, they just walk around and tell us how we should do things better. And any problems that befall their life are never their fault. It's our fault. All right? We'd preach better. We would rate, you know, teach their kids better. Or if it wasn't for you should have taught your kids better because your kids have been bad influence on my kids. And then, right? And so that's how pride ends up happening. And then the third thing that might just happen is God just might harden your heart. Just not give you the ability to hear, see, or even long for him. And we just ended that week on that up note, right? Came back and said, how can we tell? How can we tell in our hearts, in our lives, whether we've got idolatry, whether we've got pride, whether our hearts have been hardened? So last week we talked about money. And listen, you can relax. I did not take an offering. I do not own a plane. I don't wear cufflinks, all right? This wasn't a, hey, give, let's build something and get me a plane so I can reach the nations. It wasn't anything ridiculous and sinful like that. It was simply that in this community, in this culture, because you do live in the Bible Belt, you can learn cognitively and learn the language to speak and have a heart that's billions of miles away from what you really value and what you really, right? So what you think and know in your mind and what you say with your mouth is one thing. The way you live is another. And the thing about money is money reveals what you really value. Can't get around it. It is a horrible truth. I hate it. All right? But how you spend, how you view, and what you do with your money reveals where your treasure is, where your value is, and where your heart and affections and emotions and drive really are. All right? And so we said, hey, this is one of the ways. Do you have idolatry? Do you have pride? Check your wallet. Don't talk about what you think or what you feel or what you believe because it's too dangerous down here. We've all learned the right things. All right, so what is your, all right, open your checkbook. And so I even push, I mean, like how much do you give away to the kingdom and for kingdom purposes versus how much do you spend at Starbucks? And I'm not anti-Starbucks. I've got an addiction, all right? So it's a, I'm just saying you got to look at it. It doesn't lie. You lie, all right? You'll lie to yourself and you'll lie to others, even not meaning to. The great thing about math doesn't lie. I mean, you can hate it. But it's not because it lies. 2 + 2 = 4. It doesn't hate you. It's just 4. Right? Not trying to pick a fight with you. It just is what it is. So you can open your wallet, open your checkbook, open your statements, look at how you spend your money, and you can see what's really going on in your heart. Don't say you value the kingdom, you love the kingdom of God, and you love the gospel if your wallet would call you a liar because you are a liar. You don't. All right, so that was, and I know a lot of you are like, man, I'm glad I wasn't here last week. All right. And then here's what we said, because here's the evangelical mistake. I believe the evangelical mistake is, I'm with you, Pastor. I mean, let's chase God and let's pursue God. But surely it's not sinful to chase coin either. I mean, you know, a little coin of good. We can fund the kingdom with coin. All right. Now, the problem with that view is that the Bible's going to say money and God both lend themselves to mastery. And so what that means is that God is our master and we see everything in our lives as belonging to him, for him, and for the kingdom. Or, all right, or money masters us and God becomes the divine waiter who exists to bring us what we want. And this is why people love God when things are good and feel betrayed and get angry at God when things are bad. Why? Because God was not the pursuit, stuff was, and God didn't get them what they wanted. All right? This is how that happens. Because over here, if God's your master and you believe in a sovereign, loving God who is going to, in the end, give you what is best for you, even if what is best for you is suffering and difficulty to chisel away at you and make you holy, you can be grateful even in the middle of difficulty. But when something else is your pursuit and those things happen, God, you've betrayed me, you've tricked me, you've stolen from me. How could God, right? You see what happens? God becomes a waiter to get what we want over here. God becomes the sovereign we submit to over there. It's just different ways of viewing the world, man. Different ways of viewing the world. So over here, a lot of what happens, I think everybody kind of remembers when you were a kid and your parents would punish you or make you go, you get in bed at night, go, I'm never talking to them again. How dare they make me go to bed at 9:30 and not give me a box of M&Ms before I go? They don't love me. They don't love me. Like, so dumb. Ah, so dumb. And you wake up the next morning, where's my breakfast? And that's what ends up happening. We end up questioning the existence of the very provider of life. It's comical. Really is comical. Like a spoiled brat. Like a spoiled brat. Questioning whether or not mommy and daddy exists while they eat their breakfast. Yeah. All right, so money's just one way. There are others. So money's one of the ways our heart lays bare. We can't lie. We just have to look at it and go, dang it, all right? Now, there are other ways. All right, so let's keep digging. Let's keep digging. Matthew 25, we'll pick it up in 14. If you're new here, we just read a little bit and talk, read a little bit and talk, read a little bit and talk. That's what we're going to do. Now, this is the third story or parable that Jesus tells after he gives a command to watch. So basically he's saying, I'm going to return. You'll be held accountable for your life. So watch. And then he busts out three stories in a row. We'll read the most popular of those stories. And one that I think has been horribly butchered. And I'll explain that as we get to it when people teach this text. 25, picking up on 14. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them what? His property, all right? So he intrinsically owns whatever he's about to entrust. Let's keep going. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. Now, historically, when I've heard this, this is one of the things where I think people have butchered this text. I think there's some confusion because of the word talent. Because how I've heard this text preached is this. If you've got a natural ability, use that natural ability for Jesus. So if you juggle, you juggle for Jesus, all right? If you play the guitar, you play the guitar for Jesus. And although I agree with that idea, don't come out of this text for it because it's not what it says, all right? A talent in the first century was an amount of silver equal to about $1,000, all right? So he gave to one guy 5 grand, he gave to one guy 2 grand, and he gave to one guy 1 grand. Now, let me tell you why I'm absolutely confident and convinced that this is not talking about natural abilities. I'll show you why. It's not my opinion. It really is the scriptures themselves. 15. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his what? Ability. All right. So talents then are not natural abilities, but rather something that God gives us based off of our natural abilities. All right. So here's how it happened. The master's sitting at the house. First servant walks in and the master goes, man, this cat is gifted. All right. He's entrepreneurial. He's visionary, but he's also detailed. You know how rare a visionary detail guy is? He only needs 4 hours sleep a night. Driven. I'm going to give him 5 grand. Gives him 5 grand. He runs off. Next guy comes in. He walks in and the master's like, well, this guy's got no vision. But he's a detail guy, man. I mean, he can make things happen. So I don't want to give him 5 grand because he can't dream that big. But I'll give him 2. And he gives him 2 grand. And he runs off. Next guy comes in 4 hours late. Shirt's all jacked up, all right? Sheet marks on his face. So like, I thought you said two, all right? And he's in, and the master's like, should I just kill this fool right now? I should just kill him. Why am I doing this to me? And he's like, well, you know, let's teach. We can teach here. I'm not giving him $5,000 and just waste it. I'm not giving him two. I'll give him $1,000. Here's $1,000. Get out of here, all right? He gives him $1,000. So I don't think I need to unpack this anymore. This is not, he is not talking about natural abilities, but rather something God gives us that's intrinsically his based off of our natural abilities. See, the big mystery that we're trying to solve here is for us in 2007, what's a talent? Because, listen, I was doing some stuff on our bank account last night, and I'm not a $5,000 guy, all right? I looked in there. I'm not. So I don't think this is money for you and I, but it is something that is intrinsically God's that is given to us based off natural abilities. So the big mystery that we've got to solve is what is a talent for us in 07? Let's keep reading. Some other things we've got to point out here, all right? 16. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. 19. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. Let me tell you why this is such a big piece of the story. I want you to notice that whatever a talent was that was given to these men, and then it reads into us today, was not given to the men for their own use, but it was given to them to invest for the master's gain. All right? So he doesn't come and say, remember that $5,000 I gave you a long time ago? What'd you end up spending that on? It's not what he does. He comes and he says, what'd you do with my money and where's what's left of it? He settles the account. All right? So let's keep reading. Let's keep reading. And he who had received 5 talents came forward bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. All right, so immediately after getting his 5 talents, and that's what the scripture said, immediately, he runs out and he starts investing and he starts trading and he starts making money. And after a long period of time, the master comes back and he had doubled it. He had doubled it. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Look at what he says here. Look at what he says here. 21. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. Now that's pretty key now, because whatever a talent is and however we use it is going to bring us either into the master's joy or in the end somewhere else. But we'll get to that part of the story. All right. 22. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. So the 2-talent person, they took it out, and immediately upon the master's leaving, they began to sow, they began to use, they began to trade, they began to work, they began to do all these things. And they come back and he goes, I've doubled it. I've doubled it. And the master says, great job. Come on into the master's joy. All right. Now, something I want you to see here is it does not depend on the level of talent, but rather the obedience to enter the master's joy. Because I think what happens specifically in evangelical circles is we look at certain things and elevate their role and we go, oh, I could never do that. I could never serve in that capacity. I could never do that. And we end up not doing anything when in the end, God gave all the servants talents. And we'll talk about what talents are fully here in a moment. In fact, one of the ways I learned this the best was in college. I was out in Abilene. It was a repercussion from sin, apparently. But I was out there and in school, and a lady who was at the church that I went to out there, she would open up her house every Tuesday evening, and we would cook for international students, and then we'd have a little Bible study in her home, and we would try to cook dishes from their country. It just always went horrible. We're like, it's a delicacy from your homeland. They're like, it's not, and I'm offended, all right? And so we would be like, speaking of being offended, God is offended at times. Reopen your Bible. Anyway, she just opened her home, and there's a young man from India who came to know the Lord. There was a young lady from China who came to know the Lord. Why? Because a woman opened up her house and opened up her kitchen at 2 in the afternoon until 10 o'clock at night for us to cook really bad food and share the gospel. Yeah. No, that's the, yeah. All right. Now, things go bad. 24. He also, who had received the one talent, came forward saying, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." So let's get the story right. The guy takes his five talents and he works his tail off for a long period of time until the master comes home. The guy with two talents works his tail off for a long period of time until the master gets home. He doubled it twice. Master returns. Guy with one says, "I just put this under a rock. Here it is back." So you have to wonder what he was doing with all that time. I mean, maybe you don't have to wonder. I wondered when I read it. I mean, what was he doing? What was he doing? And then look at the response. "Here you have what is yours," verse 26. "But his master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sowed and gather where I scattered no seed.'" Notice that there's a question mark on the end of that. The master is not agreeing with his assessment, but only now going to turn his assessment back on him and say, "If this is who I was, the least you could have done is." And that's what you're going to see him do next. 27. "Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken. And then cast this worthless servant into the outer darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is I think 30 is going to be so key, because he says, whatever, if you do right and you do good with your talent, then you're going to get more. And I'm not talking about talent as in juggling. I'm talking whatever this talent is in this text. If you use it correctly, you get more of it. And if you use it poorly, even what you have will be taken from you. And so then you've got this really horrific, "Get this lazy bum out of my sight," and take him out where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth and utter darkness. All right, so we've got to figure out what a talent is. And we've got some, according to the parable, we've got some parameters. One, it's something that intrinsically belongs to God and is handed out based on natural ability, is given to us not for our own use, but to make money for, money, all right, to increase in value, to work for the kingdom and not ourselves. All right, so each one of us, created by God in our mother's wombs, this is Psalm 139, is created physically and then is also created with a certain bent and a certain makeup and a certain skill set. Here would be an example. I struggle with math. I mean, I struggle with it. I do not see the world in numbers, ever. All right? My father-in-law, who's a controller down in Addison, Dallas, I think he sees the world like the Matrix, all right? It's like, it's just numbers, all right? It's just like twos and ones and zeros, and that's just how he sees the world, all right? I mean, I just can't add or subtract or do any of that. I mean, I have always struggled. It has always been difficult, but any story I've ever read, I can tell it back to you. I can listen to a song twice and tell you every lyric in there and get stuck singing it for the rest of my life. It's a nightmare, all right? Just walking around town singing "Cheer Up, Sleepy Jean" by the Monkees, asking God to kill me, all right? I mean, it's just like, no, all right? Get out of my head. But it's how I'm wired. It's how God made me. It's a natural. I started reading in second and third grade, actively reading, where I'm just always reading. It is still to this day my preference, my love, what I love to do, all right? It's how I'm wired. Everyone is not wired that way. It's how I'm wired. It's how God naturally made me. My father-in-law, numbers. Couldn't remember a song lyric to save his life, but he'd be like, "Oh, what was that? Oh, it's 4-4 time," all right? He remembers the two fours, but not the name of the band or the song. That's how we're different. Natural abilities. Now, as natural abilities begin to grow and become visible to the world around us, opportunities come. Opportunities intrinsically belong to God. They are given based off of natural ability. The more natural ability you have, the more opportunity you have. And they were given to us not for our own use and our own gain. But for the gain of the kingdom. This text is about what you do with the opportunities that come your way based off the natural gifting that Christ gifted you with. So let me give you some examples of what I'm talking about. There's a doctor who comes to the village. And here's something that's just true about life, and I think we'd agree on this. Five talent guys, they tend to have more vacation than us, don't they? I mean, is it just me, or is five talent guys have more vacation than we have? They just got more vacation, man. Now, they don't ever take it because they're alphas, and if they take it, the whole company will implode. You know, they're messiah of their company. So they usually don't take it, but they do have more vacation than the rest of us. Five talent guys, they've got more vacation. They usually have more flow. They have more money than we do, right? They have more accessibility to other things than we do. Well, what does he do with those opportunities? Well, we have a guy in our church, a doctor in our church, who has big periods of time off, and he takes those time to go to Kenya, and right now I believe he's in the Amazon, and he's down there doing free surgeries. He uses the opportunity, the brain, who God made him, he pushes back darkness, and he serves the kingdom. We have another dentist who, with his time off, with his open spaces, he gets on planes and goes to Romania and fixes teeth. Right? This is opportunity afforded by natural gifting that is not viewed by those guys as their own, but rather gifts from the king to be used for the kingdom. All right, and maybe, all right, those are big pieces. I can give you even smaller ones. Like even in the smallest way, we have these opportunities to do what is right and good. I'll give you an example. Marriage. Like marriage, you got married because of natural ability. And what I mean by that is either you were attractive enough to woo someone or you had game, all right? You were ugly with game. And you had enough game to convince some girl that despite the fact that you're not attractive, that they've got a good catch. Please don't look at your spouse right now, all right? It'll just go bad. That's you, baby. You have charm, all right? It's not... Please do not squeeze a leg or nudge, all right? It's just going to go bad for you, all right? Now, you got that. You got married, natural ability, all right? Now, you have the opportunity. You have the opportunity because you're married to display the worth of Christ by fighting, contending, and working at the deepest, richest possible marriage that one can have. You can seize the opportunity or walk away from it. But you got the opportunity. And everyone who's single would be like, yeah, you got the opportunity. So you've got it. You got the opportunity, men, to romance a woman. You've got it. You can take it or you can not take it. Women, you've got the opportunity to love and empower and strengthen. You got the opportunity. Do you take it or do you not? I mean, we could go on and on here. I mean, what are the opportunities that life has afforded us? This text, this parable, this story is not only what are you doing with your money, because what you're doing with your money reveals what you really treasure and really value, but what are you doing with the opportunities that come your way based off of the natural abilities that Christ wired into you? What are you doing with them? What are you doing with that vacation block? What are you doing with that? Those free evenings. What are you doing with the sabbatical? What are you doing? And please don't hear. I'm not saying that. I want to be real careful here because I don't ever want us to get to that place where we think that any kind of relaxation or any kind of fun is not what God's going to be displeased. Like if you're wakeboarding when Christ returns, he's just going to be furious. I was going to let you in when I showed up and you were wakeboarding. You make me sick. Hell. All right, I don't think that's what's happening here at all. But I do think this is talking about how we see the world. And this is why I think evangelicals have failed miserably. How do we see the world? Like, do we really see that this is light and momentary and that there's a future glory coming? Therefore, do we see our money as not being ours, but rather money for the kingdom, to fund the kingdom and to do good eternally? Do we see our opportunities, our free time, our Saturdays, our vacations, our Tuesday nights, our Thursday nights, our Saturday mornings as, like 215 men, women, and children showed up at Calhoun Middle School in Denton, Texas, Saturday morning, worked their tails off all day long. They painted, they fixed windows, they swept the floors. Free Saturday, used the opportunity afforded to them and sweat for the kingdom. I mean, do we see the world like this? Now, why is this so important? All right, now, I think the easy answer here, the easy answer is that you're going to be judged off it. I mean, come on, like, my daughter, she's 4.5. I don't know what to do with her right now. She hadn't figured out hide and go seek. She still just falls on the floor and closes her eyes. Come find me. I'm like, man, you're almost 5. Hide, all right? I mean, that's not how it works. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I can't see you. It's not how it works. But what ends up, I'm telling you, I believe a friend of mine up in Seattle, we always have this debate about who has the tougher job, him being in one of the most unchurched states in the country or me being down here in one of the most church states in the country. And I'm telling you, we've got the tougher job. Because everybody knows what to say down here, and everybody knows how to religiously hide. And what makes last week and this week so terribly lonely is you've got to dive into you. And you've got to figure out, the heart is deceptive above all things. You've got to decide. You've got to dig it in. You've got to look whether or not you're an idolater or you're wrought with pride. And it is a painful work. What do you really value? What do you really treasure? What are you really after? Don't tell me Jesus. Don't give me the church answer. Look into your heart. Look into your wallet. Look into how you use your time. They'll betray you. Or they'll convince you. And so why is this so important? Okay. I think more important than this fact, I don't want to say more important, equally as important. Equally important to this idea that one day you will give an account for your life is the fact that in the end, God is after your joy. Look at me. Please look at me. God is not after begrudging submission. He's not honored in begrudging submission. He's not honored by you and I going, I'll do what you say because if I don't, I'm going to be out there where there's gnashing and teeth. I don't even know what that is, but it doesn't sound pleasant. So I better do what you say so my teeth aren't gnashed. Okay, I better do what you say because if I don't do what you say, I'm going to end up in outer darkness. I mean, how in the world is God honored and glorified in us doing what he wants out of begrudging submission? That'd be much like you coming to me and saying, hey, man, tell me about being married. Oh, all right, well, let me tell you. I value discipline and steadfastness. And 8 years ago, next month, I gave a vow before God and others that I would stay true and I would stay faithful. And nothing in me wants that. But I will, the Hebrew word is ahava. I will love with my will, and I will stay and be faithful. I mean, is anybody going, God, that is beautiful? That makes me want to be married so bad. Have you pitched this to Hollywood? Because it's moving. No, I mean, you walk away and you're just like, goodness sakes. You see, I'm depressed. I'm not even in a relationship, all right? I mean, no, that because it doesn't do any honor. It doesn't build anything of value. But what if you came to me and you said, hey, tell me about being married. And I was like, oh, man, where do I begin? First of all, I lucked out because a very beautiful woman actually got suckered into spending her life with me. And although externally she's tremendously beautiful, she loves the Lord and she is very deep. And she loves me, like not some external version of me, like she's seen all my shortcomings and she still loves me. Can you believe that? And she loves our children. She loves our home, and there's no one I'd rather be with than her. So the boys call, and they're like, join a basketball league. And I'm like, I'm all right. I'm all right for now. What if I said there's no one else on the earth that I would rather spend time with than her? And I would be with her if it cost me all my money. And I would be with her if I had to dress in a certain way. And I would be with her. And despite the fact she's gentle and sweet and all these things, she's at times can be scary. And at times I have to remind her, baby, I'm supposed to be leading us. Right. I've heard that if you have to say that, then you failed. But I've always heard that from single dudes. All right. So I've never heard a married dude say that. Married dudes just hug and cry. So what if in the end that's what I said? Then don't you walk away going, I want that. I mean, that's what I want mine to be. That's what I want. Now all of a sudden there's glory. Now all of a sudden there's honor. God's not after begrudging submission. He's after your joy. So here's what he's doing. Hey, let go of your money because I want you happy. I want joy. I want joy to flow out of your life. And it's the only way to have that kind of joy is to walk in freedom. The only way to walk in that kind of freedom is to live life with an open hand. And then he comes and he goes, listen, quit using all the opportunity on your selfish self. You're devouring yourself. And in the end, you die. No, give to eternal purposes. Pour into eternal things, not momentary things. Eternal things. Do it. I'm after your joy. I'm after your joy. That's what this parable is about. Enter into the master's joy. Enter into the master's joy. Enter into the master's joy. He didn't say, it'd be you to spend my talent right or I'm going to rip your teeth out. No, he said, listen, enter into my joy. Come on. And then the thing about us, I mean, we're just so dumb. It's just like we can't learn this same lesson over and over. Like we keep buying stuff and keep spending all time on ourselves. And we keep, I mean, good God, 90% of the books in a bookstore are self-help books. You've got, oh, it's just me, I've got to have it. It's me. I want to spend it. I need one of these. I've got these. And we're all miserable and we're all bored out of our minds. And the entire time the gospel call goes out to submit and enter into the joy. God's frustrating to be a pastor. Because what you're battling for is joy. That's what you're battling for. And what happens is the majority of people are happy in the kiddie pool. I mean, despite the fact that it's warmer than it should be. That's probably over the line. I apologize. warmer than it should be. And the fact that grown men should never play in the kiddie pool. Shouldn't, but that's spiritually where most of us are. 3 foot of water. Yeah. Bored. Tired. Frustrated. Lonely. While the gospel call goes out. All right, so here's what I know. Last week we talked about money. I know the majority of you were like, that's great. And then you left here and you never really kind of dug into your own soul. It's all right. It's just what we do. It's called church. And then even today, like, I'm fighting for joy, your joy. And I know some of you are like, yeah, opportunity. What am I doing with my opportunities? But I know the majority of you aren't going to go home and go, what are the opportunities I've been afforded? Have I been using them for the kingdom? I mean, what we mainly do at church is we're like, this is great. That was great. Chili's? Queso? I'm in. We go and we do lunch and then, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean 3? Let's do it. Let's go. Great message. Chili's. Pirates of the Caribbean 3. Forgot what we talked about this morning by the time we got home at 6. To me, it's such a crazy roll of the dice. Like here, you've got this infinite, almighty God inviting you into full joy. My hope is that you will not avoid nor run away from the painful work of self-examination. Because it produces fruit not only for this life, but for the next. So I have this hope. I don't lay in bed at night and think about sports teams. I lay in bed at night and wonder and think and dream what it would be like if we actually believed the Bible and what God said. And then we actually lived out what we said we believed. I mean, you just have to think that there wouldn't be all the needs that there are out there, and we wouldn't be as bored, and we... For now, it's hope. Good thing we've got 40 years here together, huh? Because I plan on yelling at you about this for 40 years. Seriously. Let's pray. Father, help us. Because I think our way of seeing's all messed up, and we need your help, and we need you to help us see the way we should, that money was given to us by you for you, and that time was given to us by you for you, and marriage was given to us by you for you. I just pray you'd shift the way we see the entire world. I don't think this is going to happen through a song, and I don't think this is going to happen through a sermon, but if you would start chiseling away at us, And maybe just there could be these small groups of one-on-one conversations where maybe some accountability on these things happened, and where life at a deeper level occurred versus just church stuff. I love church stuff. It's motivating, but if your spirit's not in it, it's not transforming. Okay, so help us. It's for your beautiful name I pray. Amen. Hey, I love you. If you honestly had plans to go to Chili's and then Pirates of the Caribbean, it was absolutely chance, all right? So go, but then unpack this stuff when you get home. I love you.
Thank you for listening to audio from the Village Church, located in Texas. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. For more information about the Village Church, please visit us online at www.thevillagechurch.net.